The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. The Mark Steiner Show here at WEAA is in partnership with the Urbanite magazine. The Urbanite magazine publishes these incredible stories every month, and the Mark Steiner Show and the Center for Emerging Media through WEAA will be producing stories that come out of that magazine, either discussions, or we'll be taking you on soundscapes of the city, or we'll be doing documentary features that come out of the Urbanite magazine. And this is the first story out of the Urbanite for this month. This month, the Urbanite featured a story, an interview with Ali Sharif, who is founder of the 660 Group, a public affairs communications group, hired to assist Newark Mayor Cory Booker in redefining the relationship between city residents and their government. And it's a really unique program, and we're going to talk about what that program is. So Ali came all the way down from Newark by train to join us live in the studio. Ali, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Also in that studio, this is also in that issue, this is an issue about heroes. And one of the heroes that was talked about is a man who has been fighting to save his community in the city. He's president of the Save Middle East Action Committee, an organization founded in 2001 to advocate for residents who were affected by the development of a $1.8 billion biotech park in East Baltimore and fighting for the rights of those citizens in that community to move back to this community and have a say in what happens. And Donald Gresham joins us as well, Urbanite's Heroes of the Month. Good to have you.
Thank you.
And representing the city in all this discussion is our new Deputy Mayor of Baltimore City, Christopher Thomas Scuddy. And Chris, well, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Mark.
And the number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by The Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. In this December issue, meet the transformers, the local heroes that are making their neighborhoods better places to live. Learn about a man who's standing up against the conventional wisdom about property taxes and explore the changing nature of Baltimore's Station North neighborhood. Pick up The Urbanite at over 700 locations in the region or visit them on the web at urbanitebaltimore.com. You can join us here now at 410-319-8888. Gentlemen, let's begin. Ali, I'd like to start just to talk about what the philosophy is behind your work in Newark to create this communication system that is really rather poor between most cities and their residents.
Well, the idea was to move away from what the kind of communication that that municipalities generally focus on, which is marketing communications, bringing new businesses in for the purposes of tourism. What we wanted to do was focus on the community and develop a constituent-focused communication strategy and create a way to facilitate better communication between the city and its residents. And there are a lot of ways that we wanted to do that. First, we wanted to look at how we re-engineer the internal processes of the city by aligning the mayor's priorities with those priorities of the residents. So the first thing we did was to go around and speak to as many residents as we can. In the beginning of the mayor's administration, during the transition period, there were a number of community engagement forums held where we talked to residents, the mayor talked to residents, and the idea was to find out what they wanted for their city. At the end of it, we came up with five things that people were interested in. They wanted public safety. They were interested in community engagement. They were interested in economic development, child and family well-being. And we looked at that and said, well, you know what? That should be the basis for how we communicate with them. It should not be around marketing. It should really be around how we create something better for citizens. So after we got this information from them, we went back to residents and we said, what is the thread between all of these five priorities that you have identified? And by and large, people indicated that it was quality of life. And previous to that, in municipalities, quality of life has really been used to take a look at victimless crimes like graffiti and such,
right.
Same way that they did in New York. We said that there's an opportunity to expand the notion of quality of life and turn it into a circumstance where everything the city does should really be about creating, establishing, protecting, and enhancing quality of life for its residents. So that was really the basis for developing this program. They thought they wanted a communications program we suggested a constituent-focused program for them.
And let's talk about what that means for communities like this one and how this actually works in practice. I mean, and one of the lines we talked about in the green room that always divides cities from their residents and voters is the lack of transparency in government, the lack of community involvement, true community involvement in government, understand what's going on. And I want Ali in a minute to comment on what he sees happening in Newark with this program that they developed there. But, Don, I'd like to, you to talk about that from a community perspective, and then we'll all kind of mix this up and bring Chris into this.
Okay, Mark, one of the things that, from the residents' point of view, is the fact that, as you already said, that there's no transparency. The one thing that people want to know, they want to be part of the conversation. They want to be able to hear the concerns of the community, be heard, and not just listened to, but heard and be able to act on them. Of course, in John Hopkins project, we have a project in East Baltimore, which is called, we call it the Middle East. And in that project, there's 80 acres of land. And in that process, there was no communication with the community at all on how the decisions that were being made to develop the community. We found out at a pretty much the word of mouth, and nothing else was done. And throughout that process, we have continually trying to get to the table to share our voices and let them understand the concerns of the community that they can be addressed before they move on to the next level.
Now, let's take an example. And I know, Ali, you live in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
So you're not here in Baltimore to know the nuances of all the little things that happen that we're describing here. And I know Christian jumped in this too. So let's talk about this miscommunication, or perhaps something deeper than miscommunication, mm-hmm. that occurred in terms of power relationships between large institutions like city governments and places like the Johns Hopkins Hospital System, which is the largest single employer in the state of Maryland, the New Bethlehem Steel of the state. And what happened here? I mean, you talked to the city, you talked to Johns Hopkins University, and there was this open communication about redeveloping East Baltimore into a biotech park, and all these jobs are going to come in for inner city residents, and how things were going to change, that people are going to move out of their homes, be given homes, given money to buy homes elsewhere, and then be invited back to the neighborhood to live amongst doctors and nurses and all the other healthcare workers. Something didn't work. Let's talk about why it didn't work and what could make it work. What makes it work? Thomas, you weren't here then. I know, Chris, this is was not on your watch, but would you like to jump in here?
Well, I was here, but in a different capacity. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of what we have to focus on is the attitude of government and the administration, how they approach, whether it's groups or residents or community associations. And I mean, I feel very blessed to work for Mayor Dixon. I don't think Baltimore could ever ask for a mayor that cares more about hearing directly from residents. And she has done what I think is a very good job of creating forums and opening up lines of communication, and she expects that of all of us and all of her directors, and whether that's in public safety and the way we're making community engagement part of our three-tiered crime plan, or if it's in the way we're addressing communities about the red line, if we're talking about homeless shelters, everything we're doing, it starts with a relationship. I think that's what she very much preaches to us, is that everything we do in government has to start with a relationship, and where the relationships have been fractured in the past, we have to repair. And where there's a lack of trust because of many years of actions or inactions, we have to go over and above to make sure people feel like their government is working for them and responding to them. So I feel like the pressure is very much on government to make sure that people have access to information, access to programs, and access to us as often as possible. And I think the mayor does that through her neighborhood conversations. My goodness, she talks to more people and gets feedback and expects follow-up more than any other public official I've ever seen. I think that's why people are so drawn to her, is that she's of the city, she hears the city, and she wants to know what people think.
Ali, let me ask you, Joy, just a kind of objective outsider for a moment about looking at this, but a man understands the nature of urban communities, urban power. Mm-hmm. And let me just lay this on the table, very frankly. The issue to me, it seems, on some levels is that people who are elected mayor, president of city council, a lot of those people who are in my job right here as a host of the show and president of my own company, have a tendency sometimes to talk beyond the community to those who have power, whether it's corporate power, power in the health systems, and power talks to power. And that people get lost in that. That's and people assume they're being talked to. as you people, at least in the public, assumed that your community and you were being talked to.
Exactly.
When people said they were not being talked to. So how do we rearrange that way we do business in a city like this or any other city in America?
I think it's very simple. I think we just talk to people. I think we talk to the people. I think there's going to have to be infrastructure set up in the way that municipalities communicate that make sure that we are getting the information that we need from the people who live in the city. If it means, and from what I understand, they do a pretty good job of this in Baltimore. The difference in Newark is that when Mayor Booker got there, there was no infrastructure set up at all. But there is a way, I believe, to set up, for instance, a set of community engagement forms that are part of the way that the city does business. So every Friday, we've got all the people who have anything to do with economic development, whether it's housing and economic development, whether it's zoning, planning, all of those people, and then bring people in from outside of the city to help teach people who are working in the city, but also to teach residents and find out from them what their concerns are. You will be amazed the kind of response you get when people feel like they are being included in the process. And I think it's very simple. Instead of talking over to the people, talk to them. And then there's no misunderstanding. If the three of us are sitting here and I'm talking to him about you, you feel excluded. But if I stop, turn my head, and have a conversation with you, all of a sudden you're now in the conversation. That makes a world of difference. It may not make an immediate difference in how things get done, but it certainly makes a difference in whether or not you are empowered to be part of a process that is going to take a longer period of time to accomplish what the mayor and what residents want to accomplish in their communities.
Before I turn to the guests, I'm going to throw out here and bring this in here to bring you all into the heart of this thing. You just heard Ali Sharif, who is the founder of the 660 Group, a public affairs communications group in Newark, New Jersey, that to create a greater communication and participation by communities in the governance of their city. He's also one of the founders of North Star News, which you can find on the web. We're joined by Donald Gresham, president of the Save Middle East Action Committee, that were both featured in this month's Urbanite magazine. And you can check that out on the web at Urbanite and see who the people we're talking to. And Christopher Thomas-Cuddy is deputy mayor of Baltimore City. You can join us here at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. What are your thoughts about how a city should run? How does communication work better in a community like Baltimore or any other community we live in? How do we do this so that power doesn't talk to power and wealth doesn't talk to wealth, but entire communities are involved? Let's just talk about that. Here's an example where a community in East Baltimore, ridden with poverty and crime, people, low employment, high unemployment, I should say, where the city wanted to revitalize a neighborhood. And revitalization is historically meant in neighborhoods. You take poor people and put them somewhere else, and you bring in people of means to rehab houses so it looks pretty and you have a new urban scape. And so how do we in the city create a situation where, from even the beginning, before Hopkins says we want to do this park, that the Donald Greshams of the world, Greshams of the world, are brought in, be part of the process from the beginning and create, is it possible to create an urban scape in a town that is actually not just racially, but economically mixed? Can that exist? Or is that just pie in the sky? How do we get to a place where the city is a different place? What do you guys think?
I think you can do it.
Ali Sharif.
It happens on levels. So if you're talking about economic development, for instance, and you want to come in and you want to redevelop a community, I think there are a couple of things that have to happen. One, before you get to a place where you bring in developers, I think you have to make an effort to go in and talk to the people who live there, figure out what it is they want for their community. If you have to displace folks, give them a voice and where they want to go. But I think it's also important to look at the economic and revenue impacts of that as well. For instance, if you bring in a developer, there is an opportunity for a mayor of a municipality like Baltimore or Newark to say, when you come in, there are not a lot of minority, for instance, folks who are who have the capacity to handle a development project like this. So part of what I'm going to do to show that I am really interested in uplifting the community and the minority aspects of this community is I'm going to create capacity and make sure that you as a large developer partner with a smaller developer. And some of that partnering may mean bringing in consultants who live in the community on the marketing and communication side. You can reach out for all of the services that you need to make the development work within the community itself. I think if you do that, the people feel like they've been talked to, they feel like they're engaged, and you get a better sense of how to move that community once the dollars actually come in and you start construction.
Now, I know that, like, Chris Thomas-Cuddy, I know you have some family issues. You have to leave at 5:30, but and then I'll bring Donald back in as well. So talk about what we've been talking about here from the perspective of the city, and whether you think things are working the way they should, or how do you think they can be improved and reformed?
I think everything can get better. I mean, always communications and lines of communications can always be improved. But I think from the city's perspective and from my perspective, a lot of what we need to focus on is there are a lot of programs and things available, and a lot of times people just don't know. They just don't know, well, how do I find out information about this, or who do I call when I have this problem, or, you know, I want to be able to speak out about this crime that just took place in my neighborhood. What do I do? And I think a lot of what we try to focus on is, as the mayor often says, it's connecting the dots. We have a lot of resources, and oftentimes whether it's a lack of information or just we're not doing a good job of sharing what we do, a lot of what we've focused on is bridging that gap between what's available from government, from other resources, to our community.
Gresham, let me ask you this. Taking your experience, before we talk to a broader way to how to reform this thing in toto, and using examples that Ali Sharif has been trying to build up out of Newark, talk from your perspective about what you think should have happened and could still happen when it comes to the east side of our town around Johns Hopkins Hospital, with the residents' input and what happens to their lives and the community around them. Talk about what was missing, what should have happened.
I think the way it's been in existence, State Middle East as organization itself has been in existence for 8 years. And in those 8 years, we have been at the table. First of all, we had to fight our way to the table. No one actually invited us or our opinions from day one. And that's one of the things that's a problem. There's man, I forgot your name.
Ali Sharif.
Yeah, Ali said very clearly, when you leave the community out of a redevelopment process, what you're doing, you're leaving the voice of a community that needed to be, because they are affected by this and they're displaced. And they feel they don't feel comfortable at that point. And so what could have been done, it could have had an ongoing dialogue from the beginning before they even started the process. We even did some various things that we started our own charrette process where what we would like to see in the area, because we were believing that in that area we could be part of the process of where things could go and we would remain residents in the area. Well, that's one of the things that didn't take place. Because after we did all that and showed that we were interested in our community and making it better, we don't have a process. We don't have a problem with having a project in the area. We just want to be part of the decision making and be part of how the outcome is. Displaced residents now are feeling they're in areas where they moved to because they rushed them out of there and there was no information given to them, and now they're in a very desolated situation. And that's because there was no communication from the beginning in 2001. Of course, this project started long before then, but before they even got to this point, they never included the community.
So let me Ali, I see you want to jump in. I want you to do that. And let me throw something into as you respond, and we're going to open the phones right after this. Is that when you hear what Donald Gresham was saying, and we talk about two things. I mean, how do you set up a process so that communities are there from the very beginning? So this doesn't just happen in a conversation between the president of Hopkins and the former mayor of Baltimore and who's ever in the Baltimore Development Corporation may say, wait, we want to do this project and let's move ahead with it. How do you create a system way ahead of time that is much more open and transparent that involves Donald Gresham and people like Donald Gresham across the city?
Ultimately, I think it has to be a mandate of the mayor. I mean, the mayor's got to, as Chris has indicated before, the mayor's got to say, this is what we want done. This is the culture that we want to establish. We want to create a culture that is focused on the quality of life for the residents in this city. That's what we want to do, and pull the best minds together to do this. See, a lot of this stuff is not new. We're not talking about new stuff here. We're talking about figuring out ways to communicate with people. A lot of it, a lot of the failure to do that are budget concerns, personnel concerns, cultural concerns with inside city halls around the country. But I think there are ways to look at changing, for instance, the processes internally. So let's take a look at if you've got a police department, you've got a fire department, you've got an emergency management department in City Hall. All of those generally are working in their own silos. So the police department is giving you information about police. Fire department is giving you information about fire. Suppose we took all of those and said, we're going to create one message, and that message is now going to be public safety. So we're going to force all of those three departments to talk together. We're going to save some money. We're not going to put out this separate information. We're going to put out one public safety message, and we're going to make sure that every time we put this message out, whether it's on a piece of paper, whether it's on a website, whether it's on a cell phone, let's use all technology we can find. Let's figure out what people are communicating on, and let's communicate with them on. If they're not reading flyers, let's text message it to them.
Now, I want to get to this technology question after we open the phones here, because before you have to go and get a phone calls in here, I mean, how do you get a city to a place? And look, I think that Mayor Dixon, the administration we have now, I mean, she came from the community, and you can feel it in talking to her that she understands what goes on in people's neighborhoods and people's lives and in her own life, with her own family, and what's happened to her own family. But the question is, how do you get to a point where Donald Gresham's voice, for one, is as important as Dr. Brody's voice from Hopkins in the conversation about the future of that community? How do you get to that point, do you think?
I think just everyone has to be included. And, you know, I wasn't involved with a lot of the early work, but I would be surprised if there were no interactions between the various community groups and those who were trying to lead the project. But to what Ali is talking about, it's not just something we should do on the side. Engaging our communities and being a part of having the public be a part of our operations is just smart business, right? And in terms of having groups working together, it makes sense that when a firefighter or when a police officer is on a block, and if the firefighter notices a wire, or, you know, an extension cord coming out the back, that it's not just about fire hazard. That also means we should be including our housing department. Someone needs to visit that home to make sure people have access to energy assistance, that they're having access to other programs. We have to work in a collaborative nature, you know, because you can't just keep a city safe just with a police department. It very much involves the health department. It very much involves those who are in the other agencies. And so to the point that we have that multiple groups fighting the same fight, that is just good, solid business, right?
Chris Tomaschetti is the Deputy Mayor for Baltimore City. Donald Gresham is President of the Save Middle East Action. Ali Sharif joined us from Newark, New Jersey. He's down here, founder of the 666 group that's helping Mayor Booker.
Not 666.
What did I say?
We don't want any callers in here.
Hello, 660. Let me get that right. Who was hired to assist Newark Mayor Cory Booker to redefine the relationship between the city residents and their government. Both Ali and Donald were featured in this month's Urbanite magazine. We're talking about how to create a city where the communities become as important as everybody else and a part of a transparent process. 410-319-8888. How do you think it happens in our cities and communities? And let me see, my screen just went black. Let me get, there we go. It's back up. And Darren in West Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi, Darren.
Enjoying the conversation.
Thank you.
Well, you know, someone once asked Mahatma Gandhi, what does he think of Western civilization? And he said it would be nice to see. I think the problem in Baltimore City and most of the inner cities goes back to old-fashioned greed. And greed is what, unfortunately, is destroying this country and destroying our inner cities. You know, you spoke of the mayor. The mayor could, with a stroke of a pen, through executive order, say to the developers, if you're going to do business in Baltimore City, you got to hire the citizens that live in this city and live in those neighborhoods. The mayor could say with a stroke of a pen to John Hopkins that if you're gonna build one house, if you're gonna take one house, you gotta build another house. I mean, it could easily be done. And so the question oftentimes what happens is the citizens comes to the meetings. I know I heard your guests from Newark say they have a 660 movement. I think here it's kind of like the OJ's 992. You know, where the citizens come to meetings and they have their say, but at the end of the day, the developers and the corporations have their way. Because we have weak political leadership, unfortunately, that will let the developers continue to have their way. And Baltimore and most of the inner cities continue to be treated as a candy shop. And people who stayed when others left many of the inner cities are the ones that end up getting the least out of enjoying the city right now.
Darren, those are interesting points, and I think those are really important points to kind of wrestle with in a very honest way. I mean, for a long time, people have said, not just in Baltimore City, I mean, this can be New York City, it can be Newark, it can be L.A., Seattle, Tacoma, Washington, St. Louis, Miami, that the power of developers is like the power of money. It's like that said, we want to throw this money in here, we need this money to redo this city, and that people feel left out completely of that process of decision-making and where these decisions are made. And that's been an ongoing battle in the city since Mayor Schaefer, as far as I know, for as long as I remember.
Yeah, Mark, I think balance is a big key to that. I think the mayor's done a very good job of bringing balance to the development process. I mean, I think if you had three or four developers sitting around this table, they would probably be saying the exact opposite. They feel like there's way too much in terms of requirements on that the city are putting them through in order to engage the community, in order to hire residents. You know, the stroke of the pen, the mayor has said, you know, residents first. Let's focus on hiring city residents as a part of construction jobs. Hey, as a part of being a good corporate citizen in Baltimore, help us fund jobs for kids in the summer. We had over almost 7,000 kids put to work this summer. Every kid in Baltimore that wanted a job had one. There's just, we're changing the conversation about what it means to be a corporate citizen in Baltimore, and I think that is very much due to the mayor's leadership.
Are we being naive, Ali Sharif and Donald Gresham, before we go back to the phones here, are we being naive to think that political power can exist any other way than the power for making decisions and then the rest of the community playing catch up or having to fight for its place?
No, I don't think so. I think that I think that we as citizens have abdicated a lot of our power over to politicians. We kind of look at it as the politicians kind of leading us around and wagging us, but we've got it backwards. They actually work for us. And to the degree that we have not pushed them or had the ability to push them, they'll do what they can. I mean, my father has this great quote. He's my political mentor. He's got this great quote. He says that his college professor told him that politicians will do absolutely whatever they can do and get away with. He said the only way to really hold them accountable is to have the ability to have a virtual razor at their throat. Now, he's not talking literally, but it does mean that citizens must be engaged and must be empowered to be able to push politicians to work in their self-interest. And one of the reasons that I love this work so much is that if you structure municipal communications correctly, what you do is you turn over a degree of power to residents so that they can advocate for themselves. It works beautifully for everybody because it takes some of the pressure off of the municipality. If folks are advocating for themselves, the municipality doesn't have to advocate for everybody. What it does require is for the municipality to have the ability to push out information on a regular basis, to push out information that is really relevant to the people who live in that community. And the only way you can do that is by first asking those residents what it is they want for themselves.
On the way back to the phones, we have to take a break in a second, but let me let Donald Gresham board.
I'm going to disagree with as he said, but one of the things that we find, and I'm not criticizing the whole City Hall in particular, but I just wanted to share with you, one of the things that we need to do more of is make them more accountable, because we put them in office, and a lot of times they forget who put them there, and they go about doing business as usual, and many years go into passing. Now, of course, I'm not calling any names and not saying anything in particular, but that's one of the things we find, because this project was made, created, and because the community felt very slighted by it, felt like they were viewed as an inconvenience. At that point, they felt like, they felt hopeless. Of course, our organization came in and said, you don't have to stand by and take it. You can stand and let the powers that be know that this is unfair, this is an injustice.
And I think the question to explore here, and I really want to explore in some depth, is Ali Sharif's work to change the way cities do business in terms of the transparency using technology and other means to change that. When we come back, Dwayne in Baltimore, you've been holding on for a long time, 4 minutes or so, and Jim in Westport, we want to hear what you have to say. I understand that Jack Shannon's also on the line, who's president of the East Baltimore Development Corporation, just called in. We'll invite him to this conversation. And Chris Thomas, I understand you have to roll out of here to pick up, take care of family business, right? Yes. We thank you so much for being part of the show. We look forward to having you back on again.
Thank you, Mark.
And it's really thank you for joining us and honoring us in the studio today with your presence. And we'll be back with Ali Sharif and Donald Gresham in just 1 minute and take your calls, get you all back on the air so we talk about how to make the city more transparent, how to share the power in our town between those who have not, those who have a little bit more. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And in our partnership with the Urbanite magazine, we are having conversations that come out of the Urbanite every month, all during the month. Ali Sharif was featured in an interview in that magazine, founder of the 660 Group in Newark, New Jersey, working with Mayor Cory Booker to redefine the relationship between Newark City residents and their government. And he joins us in studio. He came down from Newark, New Jersey to join us here. And we're also joined by Donald Gresham, who was featured in this month's issue of the Urbanite as well, as one of the heroes of the city, president of the Save Middle East Action Committee. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us here at thesteinershow@gmail.com. Let's go right to the phones. And Duane in Baltimore, you're on the air. Do we have Duane on the phone? Duane, you there?
Yes, sir, Mark. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You're on the air.
Good evening. My name is Duane Edwards, and I'm a lifetime-long resident of East Baltimore. And I'm just basically calling with my concerns of what John Hopkins has done. I'm a part of the Rose Street community. I believe you are affiliated with Dr. Clayton, sir.
Yes, I know the community very well.
Yes, sir. And basically what I was telling, John Hopkins is doing a very good job in developing the community. But they tried to come into the area where we keep clean. And John Hopkins tried to strong arm that neighborhood, but we keep our neighborhood clean through our community, with cleaning the streets and alleys, tutoring the kids. And basically John Hopkins backed off of that part of the area that we live in. And basically, you know, we want John Hopkins to continue to do what they do, but also, you know, help the people and let us know what's going on, what they want to do, so we can have our opinion. And our opinion is overlooked. And John Hopkins is a $1 trillion corporation, and they're out to develop, and they're not excluding the people in the neighborhood. We don't work for John Hopkins, basically, doing any of this development. I've noticed if you look at some of the development people, they're coming from out of state. MC Dean, which is located in Virginia. And, you know, they're not employing anyone from Baltimore, but I'm not saying that they can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they can. You know, I just basically, it's a little sad, you know, because I've seen down by Eager Street where High Hats used to be. It was a very rigid and rough neighborhood. John Hopkins basically tore that whole neighborhood down, mm-hmm. block, blah, block. And they're building it up, and it is good. But the housing, this little small housing and development like around the corner, they're going unlooked and unnoticed. You know, what is John Hopkins going to do with that? You know?
Dwayne, let me again. I mean, this is where I think, and I think Jack Channon has joined us, by the way. He called in. He's president of the East Baltimore Development Corporation. We'll bring him on here in just a second so he can join in on this conversation as well. I think, again, this is a – there are two questions I'm interested in. There's clearly a question we can debate and argue about what happened on the east side, and that's obviously become part of the show, which is fine. And we'll let Jack come on and have his say, and you and Donald Gresham and Jack and I have a conversation about it. And Ali, again, I want to – my interest here as well is how you develop a system in our urban centers in America where this doesn't become a fact of life, where the face of people being left out of the process is no longer part of the face of a city, where you begin, and what your dream was of trying to begin that in Newark in terms of using technology and other aspects of communication to try to change that dynamic. Right. Because clearly it's a dynamic in every city in this country.
Yeah, it's the same in every single city. And, you know, And it's not as adversarial, I think, as some would like to make it. I think developers, we've got caught on the development conversation, but I think
it's way beyond it. It's in every aspect of the city.
It's in every aspect of the city that you find folks who are poor in the communities feel more disenfranchised. They feel like the community's not listening to them, like the government's not listening to them, and it happens. And it just so happens that that. The areas that get developed in communities are generally those areas that that bring in traffic, that bring in tourism traffic. And the outlying communities where most of the poor residents live are not developed as quickly. But I don't think it's adversarial. I think, again, I'll get back to the same question I posed before. It really is about the mayors of these cities, these forward-thinking mayors, looking at their communities and saying it can't exist like this anymore. And so what I will do is that I will make my government and my administration more responsive. I will go department by department. I will figure out how to change the culture inside my department so that when people come into City Hall, we're all speaking the same language. And what is that language? We care about you. The city is here to ensure your quality of life. If I'm going to get a birth certificate, if I'm going to get a building permit, the message is the same. There's a reason that corporate marketing structures work. There's a reason that market research works. There's a reason that messaging and branding works. It's because you're looking at what folks want and you're delivering it to them based on what they tell you they need. I think we can do the same thing in municipalities, but it's got to be an initiative that's driven from the mayor that changes the internal culture, takes a look at the practices inside City Hall, and says we can make these more citizen-centered. Everything we do can be citizen-centered. So whether it's about how we deliver information, we can say, for instance, one of the things we're trying to get done in Newark right now is we looked at how you deliver information, and we talked to residents and said that, we don't get any information about what's going on in City Hall. Same thing you're saying. We said to residents in housing developments, in churches and mosques around the city, and in community organizations, if somebody came and delivered to you leaflets, you, Ms. Jones, who is the head of this tenant group, would you make sure that everybody in this tenant group got that leaflet? She said, oh, yeah, it would be great. As a matter of fact, I would love it if somebody came down here. So we said, all right, fine. Newspapers figure out how to deliver thousands of newspapers every single day. So let's take that model. Let's figure out how to employ some kids who are disconnected youth right now, reframe the corporate sponsorship model and bring corporate sponsors in to create a situation where we're taking these kids and we're using them to not only deliver information around the city, but we're educating them. We're giving them life skills. We are teaching them, we're training them in business development. We're training, but part of what they're doing is they're being ambassadors for the city. They're delivering this information. So now 500 leaflets get to Ms. Jones, 400 get to Pastor White. They now are taking responsibility for making sure that everybody in their circle has been touched by this. And now instead of this information sitting in City Hall, we've now created partnerships for the distribution of information because we're talking. And that is just one way to get information out. But there are a lot of ways to reframe the relationships between corporate America and the municipality so that it works both ways.
And so maybe there's a point, and we're going to open the phone to Jack Chan into this conversation, that Donald Gresham, that when these conversations take place, these charrettes about the future of communities, that they're not just presentations, but instead they're conversations.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge difference between presenting what we're going to do or what we want to do and as opposed to having a conversation to help plan what we want to do.
But I think it even goes beyond that. I think it's not so much about this is what we want to do. I think it's an inclusive conversation that says here are our challenges. How does everybody weigh in so that we get a solution? Because I think we run into problems when residents feel like governments have said to them, this is what we're going to do, and then whatever the consequences are, you're going to be bound by those. It changes, and the level of inclusion for residents changes when government says, here are our collective challenges. Here's what we face as a government. Here's what you face as residents. We're going to pull you in so that we can come to a collective decision around how we face these challenges.
What were you going to say on the way to the phone? I'm sorry, Donald.
Well, my thought, and I heard him clearly, the other part of it, and I understand once we've done that, and it, the clear fact that bothers us the most is that we've done what we thought that was a collective effort, and we felt very strongly that it wasn't that way. And when the end results got there, we didn't receive any of those things that we saw that was important to the community, and that became a problem for us.
In all fairness, we've been talking a lot about the intent was not to talk about the East Baltimore or the development there, but to have a large conversation about the city. But just the nature of the beast, that's what we ended up talking about a great deal in terms of this conversation. 410-319-8888, our guests Ali Sharif and Donald Gresham and Jack Shannon. You've been listening for a while, and welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mark.
Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I think that I've heard a few things that I just want to comment upon. I think the idea that was suggested by Mr. Sharif that this does not need to be an adversarial relationship is a very good point, but at the same time, I think around these type of projects and initiatives, it's always going to be a difficult set of conversations because of a few reasons. Number one is that there really hasn't been the type of dialogue and communication, and that's the reason why you're having this program today, traditionally in communities, be it East Baltimore or where I came from previously, Camden, New Jersey, or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, about these kind of important issues that affect the quality of life. So I think when you start from a deficit position when it comes to communications, it makes these things more difficult. I also think that the very nature of these type of transformational initiatives that I believe we can all hopefully agree that the outcome of having a stronger, more vital, healthier, mixed-income community here that creates jobs for residents is a good one. How do you get there is always a challenge, balancing the interests of longtime community members who have been here through the good times and the bad, and at the same time trying to realize that vision of a different community in which you will have long-time residents and newcomers as well living side by side. I also want to just note that we have had a number, actually more than scores of meetings around community issues. Mr. Gresham has participated in a monthly meeting that's held by Doug Nelson. As a board member, he chairs the Housing Relocation Committee here at EBDI. Around tough issues, we've had policy subcommittee meetings around these type of issues as well. And I think we've had a good discourse. Have we come to agreement on all issues? No, I'm afraid that's not the case. But I believe that we've tried to have a fair and open process. Now, at the same time, I also will tell you that since we are really sailing in uncharted waters here, there have been a lot of times when we haven't succeeded at our goals and objectives. And we've been held accountable by SMEAC. We've been held accountable by residents who may or may not be part of the SMEAC organization, and we've been held accountable by our elected officials. And I think this is going to continue to be a challenge because this is something that's not been done in Baltimore previously. This is a very ambitious community development initiative that we're talking about, and the scale and the scope of it is so large, and we're trying to address so many different objectives, as you know, around economic inclusion, right of first return for housing, creation of new jobs, as well as creating a stronger and healthier East Baltimore. There are going to be times when we fall short. I think our challenge and our responsibility is when those times occur that we recognize the mistakes we made and we try to move forward collectively to not repeat those mistakes going forward.
Let Donald say something. I'll turn over to Ali. Donald?
Well, I'm so glad that you chimed in, Mr. Jack Shannon. And you know the concern that we have, and even though this is a challenge, it's even an equal challenge for the community. And hearing that, it's fine for us to say, yeah, there are things that could have been done different, or we heard about them and we're moving on. So we've been engaged in many conversations in many of the meetings. We feel like many times that we're being heard about, not listened to, because of some decisions that were made certainly wasn't to the residents' betterment. And so at this point, we feel very strong that it is not what we were looking for. And even though it's a challenge, it's equally a challenge for the community who has been displaced. And so for us to sit back and say, well, if we make a mistake, it's over, or we can move past it. No, we need to get the mistake fixed.
Well, I don't think I said that.
No, I didn't say you said that. Okay. I'm saying to you, if you understand where I'm coming from, I'm saying even though the mistakes are being made, they need to be fixed in the sense that we need to go back to the table and clear that there's a problem with the communication that we're giving you.
Well, I think that we have recognized when we've fallen short and we've tried to address those situations. And at the same time, I take great pride in the work that my colleagues have done around a number of key areas. As you know, we committed to having senior housing delivered before anything else. We made that happen. We were able to deliver on workforce housing as well prior to the first life science building opening up. And we delivered on all of our economic inclusion goals. I agree with you that we did not, for a variety of reasons, produce in terms of home ownership. But as you know, because you're involved with these efforts directly with Tony Cipollone, Dennis Miller, and others here, are now redoubling our efforts in a tough economic situation to get that housing delivered.
I think
it's real important, though, that we continue to have the dialogue. I think that's one thing that's been consistent. And to the point that was made earlier by Mr. Sharif, these are not going to be easy conversations. And because the mechanisms haven't always been there in the past, we really are trying to figure out new ways to better communicate with Mr. Gresham and his colleagues from SMEAC, Mark, along with the larger East Baltimore community.
Well, Jack, let me just jump here for a minute, because I want to let Ali come back in to kind of take a big picture perspective here for a second. We'll let Donald come back in a second,
sure,
to kind of respond, because I think that, I would look forward to the opportunity at some point on this program to have this dialogue between between the Development Corporation and Donald Gresham and maybe the city to kind of sit here and kind of hammer out some of the details we're talking about. And I think that it really are important, because I think this is something that the press, by and large, has not really taken a hold of in a way we can have a serious dialogue to move our community forward. But I wanted to kind of turn for a minute to Ali Sharif and just talk about, this is not the first time you've heard this kind of conversation.
I hear it all the time.
All right. And all your work in community organizing and working with your dad and also in terms of what you're trying to do at Newark. So talk a bit about just your perspective for what you just heard.
I think we just came through a huge historical presidential election where,
yes, we did,
where now President-elect Obama ran on the platform of change, and so did the mayor of Newark. He said things are going to change. We had been under the same political leadership for pretty much 20 years with Mayor Sharp James. I think what residents don't, or what politicians may not understand, is that when you say change, when we're running under change, residents want change right now. They want change right now. They don't understand necessarily, or not necessarily patient, because things have been so bad for so long that change may take an entire term. President-elect Obama said it out front. Look, change may not happen in my first term. It may not happen in my second term. But we've got to build right now the foundation for change, and it's going to start from the bottom up. It's going to start in communities. So I think we all have to be really cognizant of the fact that change is not a really quick thing. But if it starts with some of these mayors who I believe really have a vision for things being different, and if they create systems within their government to make sure that outreach and accountability are both addressed, then I think we can get to a place where citizens feel engaged, where we're pushing information out using all the technology we can. And the City of Newark's website, what we did was we realized when we got there and looked at the initial website, they couldn't tell us how many people were visiting the website. There were no metrics on it, nothing. We said, let's tear it down. We don't think it really works for the citizens, and let's build something that we think works. What we did is we built a system where every resident can now have an account, and every resident can tell the city what it is they care about within the framework of these five municipal priorities that they told us were important to them. They can create account pages where we can push information directly to them. One of the things we realized about municipal websites is that if something changes in Health and Human Services, in order to find that information, you've got to dig down to the Health and Human Services page, unless they figure out a way to put all the new information on front. What we said, let's create user pages, and let's make sure that every new piece of information is automatically moved to the user pages. So when you log into your user page, every new piece of information, every new appointment, every new initiative is automatically posted on that user page. Now, what we're asking people to do is to log on and create accounts. So there's this now huge push to get people to use the website because it really is an effective tool. It sends thousands of messages now out a day to people's cell phones and people's emails, and they're communicated about initiatives. Now, again, this is all contextualized based on what residents told us they wanted. So there's an economic development message that goes out. There's a public safety message that goes out. There's a community engagement message that goes out. And these community engagement forms are being set up. So residents are now starting to feel more and more like something has changed. And if the only thing really that has changed is that they feel like they're being reached out to more, then, well, the changes that may happen, that may have to happen in neighborhoods and may take a little bit longer, they're a little bit more patient about, because at least somebody's talking to them about it. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take a minute before we get this right. It's going to require the absolute input and the absolute force of the mayors in these communities to make cultural changes in their administrations.
And I wonder, before we get back to the phones here, 410-319-8888, and Jack Shannon is still on the line, your thoughts about how you transform a city and how a city becomes transparent and power is actually shared and communication has grown. Donald Gresham, I wonder, when you hear what Ali was saying, what are your thoughts about how that, how does that sit with you in terms of the situation you find yourself in now and where you think it could have been done differently?
You know, the interesting part about it, I understand clearly what he was saying. The problem that we have is that people are in a very desolated position. If Jack Shannon or any of those people who are in power to be, per se, were in the positions that we're in, where we're living in homes, where we have abandoned houses all around us and there's no affordable housing. Yeah, you took a house from me, but you can't replace it with one that is affordable. The problem we run into is that now we are in a very isolated, we can't wait for forever change at this point, because at this point, the folk are in a desolated or in a precarious position. And so what our concern is now that we work on the issue that is at hand is affordability for homes that people can afford, because they want to remain historically in the area where they came from.
Yeah, we're talking now about we've been talking about very specific circumstance in Baltimore that has to do with the government's interaction with residents. But there's all kinds of change that doesn't have anything to do with the government and doesn't have to have anything to do with the government. In terms of how we deliver information to our communities, there are those of us and there are community organizations who are working very well. And I think that now that we're about to have a new president, they may get a little bit more support. There are organizations who have been doing really good work, who continue to do good work, and they will be the biggest catalyst for change in these communities outside of the government. So when you ask, how does it change and how do people become more involved and become more included, they demand it. They demand it because these organizations wind up finding ways to provide information and access and pushing again, like the president-elect is saying, from the bottom up. A lot of this change is not going to come from the government. The government is not set up to create that level of change in our lives. We have to do it.
I mean, he said, and it's true, change does come from the bottom up, and unless the bottom pushes, change never happens. And But let me read this email that came in from Sandy in Mount Vernon. She writes, people are so cynical in the city. No one disses Baltimore more than the people who live in Baltimore. For any elected official to have the power to push reforms through, it takes the will of the people, and right now people just don't care. What it takes is some leadership that excites, like Barack did on a national level. I think of Dr. Andres Alonso in the school system and how he excited people enough to get hundreds of people to volunteer in city schools. When will we have that on a larger community level?
Well, you know, there's a really good friend of mine, a woman named Carla Ballard, who runs a project called the Catalyst Project that looks at how we create and reframe corporate citizenship programs, bringing really caring corporations into municipalities. But again, finding ways for them to be really helpful and really useful. There's an organization called Public-Private Ventures doing really great work about, again, reframing the corporate citizenship program. There's an organization in New York called CSS, Community Service Society, run by a guy named David Jones, one of the largest community organizations or nonprofits in the country, doing a lot of work around disconnected youth and reentry. These organizations, I'm praying, will get a lot more support now that the political climate has changed. But that's where the change is going to come from. So as much as we really, really wish that government would do something different, we can help them create the kind of systems that allow for a cultural shift. But we can demand those systems by making sure that we take responsibility for our own communities.
Don, I'd like to get your thoughts on what you just read.
When you were reading the email, my thought came to the only reason why people get to the place where they don't care because they feel like they're not cared about. And when you are viewed as an inconvenience, it causes you to feel, because you're not considered a human being, you begin that way. But there's many, many people, and I certainly disagree with it, only because I know for myself living in a condemned building myself for 2.5 years, one thing I wanted very clearly understood that I was never going back that way again. I lived in a condemned building for 2.5 years. No drug-related things, just crazy things were just happening in my life at one time. But one thing that motivates me to realize it's so important that you be ahead of the game, stand for yourself, stand for the injustice that take place in communities, make folk really care, realize you can care again because you can make change in your community.
So I was really, there's one line you just said that really hit me and struck me very deeply, and Jack Shannon's still on the line, you can feel free to jump in this as well, is that you said that people who are an inconvenience.
Well, they're viewed as an inconvenience.
Yes, I mean, yes. Viewed as an inconvenience.
Right, because when they went through the process, and again, going back to 2001 when this organization first started.
Go ahead, finish what you're saying.
Okay, and recognizing the problems that we were facing. One thing we wanted to do is see where we could be a part of the chain of the transition, and we were not.
I mean, until we're out of time, I'm going to thank all of you for being here. Ali Sharif, Donald Gresham.
Thanks for
Thank you for calling in. Jack Shannon, thank Deputy Mayor Christopher Thomas-Cuddy for being here. And you should read The Urbanite to hear more about these stories and go to their website and ours. The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered this hour by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Floyd, Charles Harris, and Stavros Halkias. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and to podcast any of our past shows and additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.